Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
452.
Oh, halfway to 904, man.
We're going to get there.
It's going to be great. The 904, what do you think we should make our 904 party? What do you think our episode 904 party should be?
I think it should be at the Dude's Brewing Company.
Yeah.
All right. So we're free plugging.
Yeah. Right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate. Right out of the gate. Folks, welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. A weekly film review program where we talk about movies and I don't know, I've never done a formal introduction of our show before. I'm really running out of steam.
We have great guests.
We have great guests.
Yeah, we get some in-depth analysis of the movies along with some humorous observations and anecdotes.
I've never considered myself a film critic.
Never?
No, not with this. Even with this, people like, oh, you're a movie. I'm not a critic. I feel like I'm just a comedian and a filmmaker that likes talking about movies.
Yeah, that's a critic.
Nah, that's not. A critic is someone that doesn't make movies, that doesn't work in show business. Mm-hmm. And their job is to just go watch movies and give some sort of critique of it.
That was very true 30 years ago.
Okay.
Now, every time I pick up Entertainment Weekly, I feel like, oh, one of the Entertainment Weekly writers got like a movie deal or is writing a book or something that. So everything's hybridized now, and it's everyone's got like another hat, and no one wants to do what they're doing.
Is that what it boils down to, Chris?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nobody wants to do what they're doing.
Yeah. So, and there's always that big send-off on the magazine. Oh, we're going to miss them as they go make $1 million on this TV show that they sold from writing for Entertainment Weekly, you know, like that.
Wow.
So, anyway, we're going to be talking about a lot of movies today.
What are we talking about?
Not as critics, but as filmmakers and comedians.
Absolutely.
Who have knowledgeable observations to make about the films.
Yes.
But not criticisms.
Not criticisms.
We're going to talk about Glass, The Favorite, mid-90s, and Icarus. We've got a lot we're going to talk about.
It's a big jam-packed episode. Yeah. I'm going to discuss a little Split in there, too, because I saw that.
Absolutely.
And did you
re-watch Unbreakable, too?
No, but I feel like I should have. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm going to go back and watch it.
Okay. And we got some interesting trailers that we're going to be looking at. And let's introduce our guest, first time guest.
Mm-hmm. First time.
A comedian that I met through the Veterans of Film and TV.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And then you, because you're a vet who's a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And then you started booking this show at the Bear Burger in Santa Monica, which is like spitting distance to my house, and I would go and perform there all the time, which was fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Justin Wood.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So now you're doing another show because Bear Burger went out of, they closed up shop.
They'll probably need another bank on Main Street in Santa Monica.
God. What is up, man?
Dude, Main Street,
there's all these closed businesses.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gross.
Got to make way for banks and drugstores.
Yeah. That's literally another bank just opened up. It used to be American Apparel, then it was just a regular clothing, and now it's a Chase Bank.
Yeah.
It used to be mom and pop businesses and restaurants, and now it's like, it's really bumming me out.
Bear Burger's getting ready to turn into a bougie French restaurant that's $95 a plate, they said, about average before your drinks and everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to start a comedy show there.
That'll be the rich need more entertainment.
Yeah, they do.
So now you're doing a show
at the Dude's Brewery in Santa Monica, over in the Santa Monica place, and it's a new establishment. So the show's about 3 weeks old now. Every Tuesday night, so it's getting there. I still miss my little room at Bear Burger where it was just intimate in there, and now it's hard like booking like a large open room. So
Bear Burger was so awesome because, you know, the two guys that ran
Mark and Chris, they were just like
they supported everything
You wanted to do there. Yeah.
And they really, you know, the reason they had to leave is because the rent went so high, but it was such a cool vibe, man.
Right.
It was like, I mean, I would pop in there. Like when I was doing the FNX show and I would have to, you know, I was emceeing it. So I'd have to run my 5-6 minute set every week. You'd let me just, and it was always the audiences. I was like, I would always go, this is a real crowd. Like you could try new material and really get an idea of if it worked or not.
Yeah. And the coolest part was I never got a text or anything from them like, hey, how many people you expect tonight? You know, they were always just like, it was like when dad would like give you the keys for the night to the house. Like, hey, here you go. We'll be back.
Yeah.
And it was just,
as long as a SWAT team wasn't called. Like, it's all.
Well, I mean, it happened a couple times.
They're fun.
Tequila.
No, it was a really cool vibe. So this dude, you did a show at the dude's, a fundraiser in the fall for the Malibu fires, which was cool that you were doing that fundraiser. And I was like, well, this is a cool space.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm going to try to make this. So I hope it works, man. Yeah, if you're on the West Side on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock, check it out. Because you get solid acts. You don't book. It's not an open mic.
No,
it is not some bringer show with like comics doing material. Where you're like, ugh. It's you get solid. I mean, Lori Kilmartin's been on the show a bunch. Yeah,
Brody was on last week with me.
Mm-hmm.
That was he didn't even use a stage or the mic. Just went to all the tables and felt the need. You want to know where everybody went to high school?
Good, good. And sells their mascot. Is that what he does? Yeah. Matadors, believe it. Yeah, it's cool. So check that out.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's get into these movies.
Which one do you want to do first?
I think we should go out of the gate right with Glass because I really want to know how this was because I'm hearing, like I said, all over the map of like, oh, it's a great end to the trilogy. It's one of his worst movies he ever made. So I want to hear what you think about it.
I really liked Unbreakable.
Okay.
And I didn't see Split when it came out, whatever, a year or two ago because I was like, I was a big M. Night apologist.
For many years.
Wow. And then had to like, man, I had to kind of like The Village and then the crazy lady in the condo pool and then some of the other, you know, the...
The Happening.
The Happening with them.
You know, you're not even mentioning Avatar, you know, because he did an Avatar movie too.
He did an Avatar movie?
Like The Last Airbender. Yeah, he did that one as well.
Man. Oh,
wow.
So I was like, I didn't see Split because I was like, I just don't know if I can give this guy... And a bunch of people said... You should watch Split.
Mm.
And so I knew I was going to see Glass because when I was like, oh, it's a trilogy? All right, I'm in because I loved Unbreakable.
Right.
And I remember the criticism of Unbreakable was like, well, it's no Sixth Sense. I was like, well, that's a dumb comparison.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's like
Godfather 2 was no Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, they're two different genres and two different movies. So
there were more valid criticisms to make on that film. Then it's not like Sixth Sense.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous. I loved it, and I love that in Unbreakable that he's like doing that.
It's like saying he didn't have enough medium shots.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis didn't talk like this enough.
Yeah.
I loved it because I'm obviously a comic book fan. Mm. I love the big Marvel movies, but he did Unbreakable. What? It's that of like if people with supernatural abilities. Actually existed here.
Yeah.
Not bitten by a spider or coming from Krypton or billionaire rich kids or whatever. Like you were born with a heightened sense of whatever.
Right.
And you developed it for whatever reason. I thought it was really cool and I love Samuel Jackson at the end of the movie. You go, oh, super villain. I was on board for the whole thing.
Right.
And it was really cool. So I went back and I rented Split. Last week.
Right.
And it's a great movie. I mean, in terms of like thriller, it's a horror thriller, creepy thing, but then really, it's got some heavy messages and heavy tones in it because, James McAvoy's character obviously has all of these personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, and there's good science fiction in there, what we talk about on this show, good science fiction is rooted in fact, in science fact, that then the filmmaker expands on what if.
Hard science fiction.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's the theory that a lot of neurologists and behavioral scientists have said, which is people with multiple personalities, a lot of times there was a severe form of childhood trauma.
Right.
Right.
And they develop these personalities to deal with it. Mm-hmm.
You can go all the way back to the movie Raising Kane if you want.
Right. So this goes into that. And then M. Night goes, well, what if in the way the brain can create, because I mean, it's the research that they've done, one and actual research, one personality writes right-handed, one writes left-handed.
Right, right.
And they can't, they don't mix. It's crazy. Like one can speak a language and the other one can't. It's like, wow, it's really startling what the brain is capable of.
Yeah.
So he just asked the question, well, what if the brain then developed this heightened sense and there's one... And that's the beast is in the horde of James McAvoy's personalities. The beast is someone that actually has super strength and can climb walls and it's like awesome. And then so now you put it in this unbreakable universe where you've got Glass, who is
it's like the Lex Luthor.
He's the Lex Luthor. He is he's easily injured, but his brain is gifted. And he's one of those villains who he's not pure evil.
Right.
He's like, I want the world to see what we can do. You know, he's sort of like the sort of Ra's al Ghul in the sense of like, you can see some of his point of view. Like I wouldn't use those tactics, but, but, and then, you know, Bruce Willis was just born, you know, with a heightened sense of strength. He's just a stronger, he's bullet, his skin, his muscle structure. And so it's really a cool thing. So Split is really fascinating. And spoiler alert here, if you haven't seen Split, you got to watch. So here's a spoiler alert. I would pause this or fast forward. At the end of Split, you know, James McAvoy is running wild or whatever. And there's this crazy crime. And then you see Bruce Willis in a diner and he's watching it and he's like, oh, I got to do something about this. And you're like, oh shit. Like, here we go. So Glass gets right into that. And then
does it start at the mental hospital?
No, it starts with a bunch of big events happen. So McAvoy's character is on the loose. And then M. Night does a really cool thing. The kid that played Bruce Willis's 10-year-old son 15 years ago or whatever, they cast the same actor. So now here's a 25, 26-year-old guy or whatever.
Oh, wow.
So he looks like, you know, it's great. And so he's like, Dad, and you see Bruce Willis is a full-time superhero. He has a home security business, and his son is like, you know, he's on the prowl. And he's on the prowl, the beginning of the movie, looking for James McAvoy. And they're doing grid searches and another set of young girls have disappeared.
Right.
And so it sort of picks up right kind of where the end of Split left off. And then they get captured and they go into the mental hospital. And all of that is really fascinating because the doctor at the mental hospital is trying to say, you don't have superpower.
Right.
You're delusional. And how they explore that. The movie a little long? Yeah, that's my criticism of it.
Well, I will say this. When I was reading, the original cut of the film had a run of 3.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
And he trimmed it up by cutting 3 of Kevin's 23 personalities out of the film.
Yeah, there's a lot of personalities in there. And I feel like you still could have cut another 15 minutes out of this film.
Right.
But I don't know. I was kind of on board, and any of my criticisms were sort of minor. It was just like, well, this is a little slow. But
all in all, you liked it?
I liked it. If you liked Unbreakable and you like Split, I think you're going to really like this movie.
Okay.
And if you liked Unbreakable and haven't seen Split and Glass, I would go see them.
Okay.
If you really didn't like Unbreakable and you're done with M. Night Shyamalan, then I don't know if these movies are going to do it, are going to bring you back
right.
into the fold.
Nobody left in the fold after a while.
But I thought it was really interesting. And again, going back to Split really goes into...
This might be the longest filmmaker comeback in history.
Yeah.
This is how many 20 years it took to make another good movie.
You know, one of the things Split really deals with is if you were severely abused, then you've gone through pain and trauma. You've seen the light, sort of. That's the James McAvoy's thing. You've had the broken. You have. I forget how he says it. So the young woman, and I'm blanking on the name. Aaron, can you look that up? The cast of. you know, in Split, they reveal that she came from some trauma. And, you know, so it's really intriguing. I think there's more to it than just a guy doing his version of a comic book thing.
Right.
Like he put way more into it in Split, and then that comes out and is really addressed in Glass. I had fun at the movie. I mean, like, there's some scenes.
Were you in the food theater?
I was not, but I was in a reclinable seat, and I did buy some nachos.
And see, you're already comfortable.
I'm comfortable, and I had snacks, so I was ready to go.
All right, so you know, that's kind of a twist ending. You liking the movie, really? that's a big M. Night twist.
You know, and it's just, I don't know. These are three good films that I really liked. Okay. I had a blast.
Wow.
All right, so that brings the total to four.
That's not bad.
Yeah, no, it's
the filmmaker's a lot worse.
yeah, very true. I also read some trivia too that, you know, his original vision for the first movie, for Unbreakable, that there was a villain for him to fight. There was going to be, you know, James McAvoy's character, but he couldn't fit it in the original script. And I think it would have gotten too busy if he would have kind of put another character in there. I think Samuel Jackson was fine.
Great.
Yeah.
I think that was great. Did you see Unbreakable, Justin?
It's been years since I've seen it.
Do you remember liking it?
I don't remember. I remember not making it the whole way through the film. And while we're talking, I was like, remember something from the movie. But that's what I remember, not making it through the whole. I saw Sixth Sense. Thought that was a great movie. Mm-hmm. I was the last person in the theater to realize that he was dead. So, so you're dealing with today.
But that's interesting. So Unbreakable didn't really land for you.
No.
Did you see Split?
No.
Didn't have an interest in it?
No.
See, that's the thing. I don't think you would give a shit about Glass then.
Mm-hmm. I think, like, I was mediocre on Unbreakable. I'm like, it's okay. I didn't love it, but I thought it was. I didn't think it was bad. So I'm like, I'm wondering. Well, will Split change my mind? And then
did you see Split?
I didn't see Split yet. No, so I still have to see Split.
You know what? I think why you should watch Split, Chris, is because you really like there is a horror element
for sure,
and a terror element. You know, thriller, whatever. And I think you should watch that.
Okay.
Because I think that might bring you back in.
That might get the taste of The Visit out of my mouth, maybe.
Yes.
Okay. Palate cleanser. Yeah. I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot for sure.
It's like a sherbet between courses at an expensive bourgeois
for your
restaurant.
Eyes.
It is. It is a
sherbet for your
eyes. It is sherbet for your eyes.
Well, I saw the movie The Favorite, as you know, has gotten wide and I would almost say extreme Oscar love because it's been nominated for many, many different categories. As you guys may or may not know, The Favorite is a period piece. It is a lot of wigs and gowns with Queen Anne. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's about there's a lot of court intrigue in it. Mm-hmm. You know, basically two, you know, I don't know what you would even call them, court attendees. That you're never really sure what anyone's job is, except for the people in the kitchen. courtesans, whatever. And, you know, one is trying to... You know, they're cousins, and then one is trying to up her status at the expense of the other. It is a mix of Dangerous Liaisons, The Madness of King George, and what's really interesting about it is that it's done by the guy who did The Lobster, which was in a crazy, insane movie. Now, the thing, I liked The Lobster. It had this weird logic to it. It was completely out there. Basically, it was about if you don't find a soulmate and get married, you have a certain amount of time. You go to this hotel. If you don't find someone to fall in love with, they turn you into an animal of your choice.
Oh.
So, but, and that, like, it, like when you read the description, I'm like, well, how, that makes no sense. How would that be a movie? But the movie itself, because it was up for most original screenplay.
Right.
It got nominated. It makes this kind of bizarre, wacko sense to it. So you're like, okay, well then let's see what he would do with a period and gown piece.
The wigs had their own trailer.
The wigs had their own trailer, yes.
That's worth it.
And the costume designer, Sandy Powell, had to divide her duties between this film and Mary Poppins Returns. Both productions used adjacent workspaces at Pinewood Studios, so that made sense. Here's the thing about this movie. I know a lot of people may enjoy it. I, however, did not. I thought it was absolutely terrible. And it really is. It's the Phantom Thread of this year. It really is. It's it's that movie that, you know, is going to really resonate with a certain amount of people, but then everyone else is like, what the fuck is this garbage? And it also, it's being promoted as like, oh, it's an edgy, brilliant kind of movie. And it really isn't. What it is, it's those movies that I described. It's Madness of King George, except with Queen Anne. And it also is like Dangerous Liaisons, or even like you could have, there's a touch of All About Eve in there as well. But then you take, it's still a period wig and gown movie. And then it has an extra layer of, like, dirty jokes on it, and then that's it. So it's like this weird combination of, like, well, how this doesn't have the crazy loopy logic of, like, The Lobster. It doesn't have, like, you know, the really fun eccentricities of that movie. And then I was reading that this is the first time the director, Yorgos Lanthimos, directed a film in which he is not the screenwriter, nor is his regular partner, Ephemis Philippou. These are all Dr. Seuss names, by the way. So it's interesting to see this was a completely different feel of this movie with him without his partner. So you could see where a lot of the quirkiness in the voice actually came from. It was right. This other guy. It wasn't him.
Who wrote the script then? What is it, based on a book or something?
So I don't think it's
Deborah
based
Davis
on a book.
And Tony McNair. No, it wasn't based on a book.
No. So... And here's the thing. It's the kind of movie, too. It was one of those movies that you could see the intention. Like, it was trying to stick like a take like a wigs and gowns period piece and kind of turn it on in its ear and show you something differently. Like, like even like the way Black Swan was not really about ballet. That was that. Yeah. That's what this movie tried to do, but it failed. It was like it really was a gown and wiggy mess that a count and wee mess that had some like, oh, somebody's gonna say something dirty or mean now. That's right. Like, and it was almost like the camera stuck on one of those scenes, and like you could almost hear the director in the background going, see how edgy we are, or see how clever we're being with this genre. And they did weird things with the camera angles and the sound. So all those artistic intentions were there.
Yeah.
It just didn't come together, at least not for me. So it might resonate like if, you know, I do compare it to Phantom Thread. There is a certain amount of people that will really enjoy it and love it and think and really appreciate it. But I am not one of those
people. It's just every year, man, they make a wig and gown movie. Yeah.
But it actually
made
me...
And they made two of them this year. Mary, Queen of Wigs and Gowns.
Yeah.
And then the favorite wigs and gowns.
Now, there's a couple things that definitely need to be addressed, because one of them is these Academy Award nominations, because they both got nominated. Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone. Got... nominated for Best Supporting Actresses. Now, first of all, they are not supporting actresses. They are the lead. It is their story. The entire story. The supporting actress is actually Olivia Colman, who plays Queen Anne. She's, you know, because she's not the main focus of the film. Right. It's the relationship between these two relatives and how they're, you know, they're at each other's throats and in the effort of just basically status.
Yeah.
So they want to keep increasing their status. But there was also this weird subplot of like one of them, like Rachel Weisz's character, who's basically the queen's handmaiden first, would like manipulate her into these weird things like, well, you need to double the taxes on everybody and we need to continue this war with France. But there's never a motivation of like, well, why? Why would you do those things? You know, clearly it's going to bankrupt the country and, you know, the other political parties are against it. Like it was never, are you a foreign agent? Or like, is there some reason why you're trying to destroy the country through the queen, but yet you still like the status of being right next to the queen? So there was a lot of stuff that also didn't kind of fall into place, but mainly the movie just on a whole didn't work or come together the way the filmmakers indeed wanted it to. There's nothing wrong with the performances. Everyone does a good job. It's more, which also got me a little irritated, because with them, they're not supporting characters. With them taking those to supporting character nominations, that meant Nicole Kidman didn't get one for Boy Erased, which she deserved.
Right.
So it really... you know, there's so few slots, but it also depends on how the film is submitted. So, but they're like, oh, well, it'll be easier to get a nomination for supporting. But even though your actors are not supporting actors.
Right.
So that's another thing I think the Academy has to really look at and like reject these submissions. If you've seen the movie, you're clearly aware that they are not supporting actors. Mm-hmm, right. They're the leads. Yeah. You know, you don't see the girl playing Queen Anne in all the promotional literature. No. But you're saying she's the lead. But right. No, she really was not. So I don't know. I, this is one of the movies I'd like to see what you guys think on the message boards, because it was that kind of movie where is there something about it that really resonated with you? Did you like the quirkiness and the mix of like all these weird things that they tried to put together? Because it didn't work for me, which is weird because I thought The Lobster was really good, and that was so out there and so, you know, just right. completely had its own story and logic. But this one was, like I said, caps and gowns with dirty caps, gowns, dresses and dirty jokes, wigs. More wigs. And you know, it was the kind of thing
me liketh the dick
yeah.
joke.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to, like, even with the costumes and the wigs, like, everything was overly exaggerated and, like it was very costumey. It was almost right. like, you know, from Hunger Games, Pan Am or whatever. Like, that's how they were kind of dressed, where it was almost like the Wizard of Oz kind of thing.
Yeah.
But and I get it, you know. And but then they replay a lot of the same jokes and, you know, like, and the dynamics and the movie doesn't really, okay, I kind of know where this movie's going, but now I don't really care about the journey. It doesn't matter. None of the performances or the characters, you know, really stuck with you. Whereas, again, I'm thinking of Nicole Kidman. That performance made me feel something. She deserves this nomination. They don't.
Right.
But it's not to say that they did a bad job. It's just there wasn't enough meat there to warrant nominations.
Right, yeah.
All right. So you guys tell me on the message boards what you guys thought of the movie, because I really want to see
your favorite wig and gown movie.
Yeah, or hit me up on Twitter, because I think I'm right. The Emperor has no clothes. The Emperor has no goofy gowns and wigs. But I think I'm sure there's people here that enjoy that.
Sadly, the Emperor has it every fucking year.
Yeah, every year there's a movie like this. But at least with Phantom Thread, it wasn't all over the nominations. This movie is all over the nominations, and it doesn't deserve to be at all.
Oh.
So...
All right, so all right. Justin, you saw mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. Saw mid-90s over
What did
the
you
weekend.
Think of that?
There's definitely not going to be any consideration for it. But, you know, I was interested to see how Jonah Hill was going to do.
Wasn't it Jonah Hill's Garden State?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he wrote and directed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I believe is his directorial.
No. He didn't. Yeah, he wrote and directed it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was his first time directing? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lucas Hedges was in it. I don't know if you guys have seen him in anything this year, but
yeah, he's in everything.
But yeah, it was just one of the. It was just like an easy to watch movie. Didn't take much thinking. It was all. It was nostalgic for me, like growing up in the mid-90s. Like
right.
I saw like a lot of similarity, like having an older brother, like breaking mm-hmm. into his room when he leaves, brother getting pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I grew up in. A farm in Ohio, so there's a lot of stuff like with this. It was like all, it was like a Red Hot Chili Peppers music video. Like everything was all, California. Like, okay, we get it. You're in California,
mm-hmm.
but no. Overall, it was a good movie. The funniest part was for sure Gerard Carmichael had a cameo in it,
nice.
Playing a security guard, and it's. If I was to bet on it, I would say it was all improv because they just let him just. Go off on these little kids, and all the mm-hmm. kids are just laughing like mm-hmm. harder and harder as the more he goes on with it. So, you know, it's good. It's one of those movies that if you have nothing else to watch. I highly recommend. It wasn't bad by any means. But
good airplane movie.
What's that?
Good airplane movie.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Do you feel like? I mean, watching it, were you like, you know what, Jonah Hill? I'll see more of if he directs, writes, and directs more. I'll go
right.
see more.
I'll,
of
I'll
stuff.
Go see another one. And I'll be honest, what surprised me was he doesn't get in front of the camera the whole time. Like I figured, a well-known actor like Jonah Hill would probably, I can write myself a line or two so I can be in the movie. And I was like, actually, pretty impressed that he didn't.
Or at the very least, the studio or the financiers would go, dude, you need to play the principal mm-hmm. or something. You need to be the stepdad. You got to be somewhere in there.
Because it is just a bunch of skateboarder kids that are acting in this movie. So, I mean, the acting's not phenomenal, but mm-hmm. it all just seemed real. Mm-hmm. Like, it seemed like...
Well, yeah, let me ask you that. So then, Is it, I mean, you say there's funny moments in it, but there are also sort of heartfelt moments about being in sort of a broken home kind of aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Like the mom is like super dysfunctional trying to raise two kids. Like the first, I think she had the oldest son when she's like 16. Oh. So they're like real similar in age, and she's like talking about her dating life to him. And and it's just like, you know, this kid starts hanging out with the older crew. So he's like, you know, drinking with them and everything, like doing what he can to impress them like kids do. So. Oh no! It was you feel like you're definitely mid-90s watching it. You're like, that's definitely childhood, especially skateboarding in California. Right. So,
oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah,
it looked interesting to me. I'm glad to hear that it was a decent film because it looked interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know as far as like acting if any of the new actors in there are going to go on to do much, but. They're good skateboarders, so.
That's probably how they cast it. Exactly. They need to be good skateboarders more than anything. And then, well, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
All right. Mid-90s.
Now let's talk about a documentary you saw called Icarus. Now, I started reading about this, Graham. This was absolutely
Well, it won Best Doc last year.
Yeah.
It
won Best Doc, but I didn't realize, too, the film was substantially edited after the premiere at Sundance, where it was bought by Netflix. The new version debuted in Sundance London before being released to Netflix in August of 2017, because it won for 2017. Mm-hmm. And then a hit at the Sundance Film Festival. There was some speculation the reason the festival itself was hacked because of the film's presence in the lineup, and the Russian authorities need to suppress the revelations in the film. Which now I want to hear about this because it didn't get into detail in the descriptions. Like, what actually was revealed in the movie?
So here's what happened. It was one of those things. We talk about the different types of docs, right?
Yes.
There's a historical doc. Mm-hmm. There's I'm bringing my camera along kind of thing.
Right.
And you know, there's like I'm going to document this thing, and then in the middle of that. Holy shit, do we take a right turn?
Do we we discover something we were not expecting?
We were not expecting. And that's what this movie is.
Okay.
So what happens is the filmmaker, and let me bring all this information up. So let's see. Icarus, there it is. So
it's funny when you type in IC, the first thing that comes up is iCarly.
So Brian Fogel is the director, right? And he's a cyclist, and he's not a professional, but he's like a high-end amateur cyclist.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So he enters these big pro-am cycling events that are like, I mean, he says it. It's like, this isn't for guys on a weekend hobby. Like, you're training full-time. Do you have a sponsor and you make your living at this? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But you're, there's some people that are very close to that. If not, you know, they're trying to make it to that step. He wanted to, and when the Lance Armstrong thing, and they go in this briefly in the beginning of the film, when the Lance Armstrong revelations came out, and they show Lance Armstrong saying, I've never doped. I'm the most tested guy in history.
Right.
And then he finally says, yes, I did it.
Yeah.
And you hear him go, wow.
Methinks the lady protests too much.
Yeah. It's like, it's very much, and he goes, so you know what I want to do? I entered this big, it's called the Haut, Haute. I think it's in Switzerland. It's a big, it's like the biggest, it's the Tour de France for amateur cycling events. Mm. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's not 3 weeks long, but it's like 4, 5, 6 days. It's an intense thing. You go through the Swiss Alps. It's no joke, right? So he goes.
You need a word between amateur and pro that pro would probably be.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And he finished 24th, which was like a big deal. And he goes, you know what? How did they get away with hiding the doping so much? Mm-hmm. So he starts talking to this guy at WADA, which is the like international doping board, or they oversee it, or they're the you know, like the legal. Mm-hmm. They do all the testing and verify the testing and all that stuff for the Olympics, for everything. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I want to do a documentary about, you know, doping and how to hide and how to pass a test through WADA. And I'm going to document to show how the system is flawed. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, all right. So he starts meeting with these experts and they put him on a regimen of testosterone and performance enhancing drugs. And they're going to put you like this. And then he meets this guy, this Russian guy, Gregory, who worked at this lab in Russia. And he's like, this is how we would do it. And then the whole, then all of a sudden he starts uncovering this serious Russian doping thing that goes all the way to Putin, who was like saying, I want this. And it, the 2008 Olympics, the Sochi Olympics, and it's all leading up to 2012 in London. Mm-hmm. Sochi was 2014. Those are the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
And all these people are, and it's like, he uncovers this crazy plot and it's like, it's nuts. And
because this one scientist volunteered to talk to him about the system. Wow.
And the guy, I mean, you know, and it's sort of, and they do an excellent job of sort of showing it in real time, the actual footage and the Olympic Committee and these investigations and his evidence. And you're just like, wow. And he explains how we would get it. We would get the urine samples and this is how we would change them out. And as like, it's nuts, man. It is.
Didn't they have to get him out of Russia after that? Like they're calling for his head. Like,
They had to get him out of Russia.
He had to ask probably for asylum.
Yeah. And all this stuff. I mean, it's like, wow. I really, it's a really pretty staggering film. Now, I see why it won the Oscar, because this is, we're going to get into some political vigilante territory real quick. I think it's pushing the, we need Russia to be a bad guy with everything and blame them for everything. So this got pushed rather than 13th, which is a great documentary, or I'm Not Your Negro, which are like, I thought I'm Not Your Negro should have won last year. We talked about this a lot. This is a well-made documentary. It does everything a good doc does. It brings you into a world you might not have known about, and you're being brought along for the twists and turns.
I think too, what makes a documentary like this unique is because of that, the very nature of it, where the filmmaker was not expecting to uncover this. So I think that kind of gets points too with the Academy of like, you've uncovered something not only when you're not supposed to uncover, you weren't even expecting it to uncover. And as a filmmaker, how do you adjust and adapt to that?
And that's a great point. And he adjusted and adapted quite well. I mean, it is a very compelling documentary. And the fact that it's happening in this huge international, bombshell or whatever you want to call it, and how he's reacting to this and how he's dealing with this Russian scientist. You know, they become friends. The Russian scientist was like, I was told to do this.
Yeah.
You know, and
just doing my job.
I'm just doing my, you know, and it's like, it is really, I mean, there's some scenes in there where they're meeting with like the WADA officials and all these people in there. And there's, and they're literally, they have like several cameras set up. He's explaining this stuff because I have the evidence. And you see these like two women at the end of the table and they're just like, with their mouths open and they're talking to each other. And one of them's like got her head in her hands. Like, oh my God, like this is a disaster. Yeah. Like we had no idea. Yeah. And
also then you realize too, well, you're just an organization. What could you possibly do about it?
I mean, it's,
there's that moment of like, you know, well, is there, do you have an enforcement wing of your dope anti-doping organization?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really intricate and you see how it's done. And I mean, part of me was like, it's a very well-made movie. It's a well-made doc. Part of me is like the over-politicizing of this. I was like, well, these fucking all athletes are cheating with, you know, they've been, they've all been doing this. So like,
even being a UFC fan, I've noticed like there's this fighter, John Jones, that he's making USADA just look like a joke. Like they're finding steroids in his system still. And they're like, well, it's, they're tainted. And it's like, you've tested them for 2 years in a row now and you keep finding this same exact steroid. And like, well, as long as it's the same steroid and he's at one level, then he can still fight. And it's like,
well, wait, doesn't that mean he's still taking it?
What happened to, hey, if it's in your system, you can't fight. Like, but now it's like, no, if you just have it at this level or below, you can fight.
I understand there's like, you know, it's, so that stuff stays in your system residually for a while, but after a year, You know, I don't know how much of a chances are you may be putting more in.
Well, that's the, and this doc shows how somebody like John Jones could very well be skirting the system.
Yeah.
And you see this guy's results before the whole Russia cover up thing gets revealed.
Mm-hmm.
You see his numbers, man.
Yeah.
And his training numbers, and his training team is like, dude, you're here. And the guys administering the PEDs are like, yep, this is where you should be. And it's like, you know, and they show like last year he came in this place and this year he's way ahead of it and his times are better and everything.
Sounds like Rocky IV when the Russians doing the training and when they're showing him like with getting the steroids and hitting everything and all the numbers and everything. You got scientists.
What a great montage that was. You see Dolph Lundgren getting injected with scientists, and then you see Stallone out on a farm doing push-ups.
Yeah, like, running with logs on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, you know, and you go into like the John Jones things. Like John Jones is an amazing martial artist,
the best ever,
one of the best. Yeah. But he's been tested positive for cocaine. You know what I mean? And now we're getting this. I mean, it's an athlete's, and you saw it with Lance Armstrong. That level of athlete is so competitive, and there's so much money at stake.
Yeah.
Because guess what? If you're not winning anymore, your meal ticket's gone, baby. The sponsors are gone. What? You're done.
Right.
So it's, I see the temptation. And then because there's so much money to be made.
Right.
And when someone becomes that good in their sport, I mean, they're not a person. They're an entity. They're a business. Right. And then so all of the other money people are like, and everyone's willing to look the other way. And
yeah, because their livelihood depends on it too.
And I mean, look at the UFC. Yeah. When John Jones fights, that's a pay-per-view business model.
They moved an entire event with under a week to, like, all the fighters flew into Vegas. All this stuff happens to John Jones. They're like, the Vegas Athletic Commission's like, yeah, we're not going to allow him to fight. There's no way. So instead of, you know, saying, okay, John, you can't fight, they pick up and move the entire event over to the Forum in L.A. with like 5 days notice. These people are all like training to fight, cutting weight. And now because of one person, the UFC's like, oh, no, we need this guy on the card. This is our, without this guy on the card, we're not going
to. What about everybody had tickets to go to?
Yeah. It was like during the holiday season too, so people were probably planning little Christmas trips around.
Yeah, absolutely.
This.
Can you imagine that? Because one guy sells that many pay-per-views, it's okay that he tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs, and we're moving it to a different city.
Yeah,
that'll give you some indication as to like, why are these athletes cheating?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Dana White took
an entire event.
Because there are no consequences to your actions.
Right.
And there's been other guys that aren't John Jones that pop for that. And there's
we're going to make an example out of them.
On 2 year suspensions.
Yeah,
and they had less in their system than he had in his system. It's just like, just be good if you're going to cheat. Just make sure you're good.
Yeah, just be win a title. If you can win a title, then you can cheat.
Yeah,
it's like, that's the same thing with Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
Portfolio gets checked first before justice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's you know, it's crazy. And then some of the, that's kind of how I felt. And this isn't a criticism of the filmmaker, but in just watching some of the people who are outraged within the movie, I felt the same hypocrisy of like, well, you guys profit from this. And they banned the Russians from competing in the Rio Olympics. And then they overturned it at the last minute.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and then the Russian soccer team, you know, this last World Cup, I love the World Cup. It was a great event.
Yeah.
It was exciting to watch Russia, who wasn't supposed to make it all the way to the final. But I'm watching this movie going, huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to wonder, every athlete.
Remind you a little bit of Shaolin soccer, where they're all like, you know. Performance enhanced. Nobody could beat the team.
Yeah.
They got this magic drug that they're all taking.
I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, you know, I remember, you know, I'm a big Cubs fan, and the summer of 98 was the big home run battle year between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. Mm-hmm. And it was really awesome. And then later it came out that Sosa was doing, and they were all doing, and I was like, it tainted it because Roger Maris and Babe Ruth weren't on performance enhancing drugs. And it sort of was like that summer. And, you know, baseball was coming off a strike.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, and these corporations, man, they're just looking at the bottom line and they don't give a shit about anything else. So it's hard to take any of it seriously.
I loved McGuire's like cop out too when he purposely put the bottle of creatine behind him for one of his interviews. So when he popped, he'd be like, oh, it must have been the creatine. I didn't know that it had those. And it's like, yeah,
you,
good job.
You guys know. Job. Everybody yeah. knew.
Yeah.
They all know. It's like Sam.
It's like a, you know, a Looney Tunes cartoon. How did that get there?
Yeah.
I mean, Sammy Sosa had a corked bat. He got busted for that. And he was like, I didn't realize I picked up the wrong bat.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I am.
Right? Professional athlete doesn't know what equipment they're using.
Yeah,
got it.
It's like, oh, I don't know. How did, brass knuckles. How did they get
there? Oh, man. Yeah. I didn't know somebody put nickels in my boxing gloves.
Yeah, it's so weird. So we have a sponsor.
Oh, snap.
This episode, Eero. They want to build Wi-Fi that they wish. All right, I'm going to start over. This is a very cumbersome beginning. Yeah. Eero, life's too short for bad Wi-Fi. The Eero Plus is designed to provide simple, reliable security that defends all your home's devices against a growing number of threats such as malware, spyware, phishing attacks, as well as unsuitable contact. The Eero Plus works with the Eero system, the second generation, and it has basically beacons, what are kind of little satellite Wi-Fi installations that you can just literally plug in to an outlet, and they enhance the range so your whole house can be covered. And it connects over Ethernet or wirelessly or in any combination. And it gets total network protection. Eero Plus can block malicious and unwanted content. Great security, content blocking, ad blocking, and then you also get security apps and protection, password management, anti-software, all that cool stuff. And it's the single router model. It doesn't fit our increasingly high bandwidth world. So that's why you really need these beacons, because everyone, you know, you're always in that one room that the Wi-Fi drops out of. Right. So this will cover those spots. And what's great is that also you can manage it all in an app. The Eero app will let you manage the network from the palm of your hand, and has great customer support. Now, I put it up. It is really easy to put up, and the app makes it really easy to configure. And also updates itself, so you don't have to worry about downloading firmware, which is also a big help. And we are not going to let you guys pay full price, as always. Now, all you have to do is you get $100 off the Eero base and unit and two beacons, and you get 1 year of Eero Plus. All you got to do is go to Eero.com/comedy, and at checkout, enter the word comedy. So Eero.com/comedy, and at checkout, enter comedy. You get $100 off the base unit and two beacons package, and 1 year of Eero Plus. All right.
Nice.
Check it out. So you know what else we have today, Graham? We have Patreon sponsors.
Before you go into that real quick, I just
No, I don't want to hear another word.
The name of the actress, Anya Taylor-Joy, she's in Split and Glass. She plays Casey Cook. She was like abducted by James McAvoy in Split and gets out, and she's got a pretty cool storyline in Split and Glass. She's a pretty good young actress.
She was
in the movie Thoroughbreds. So it's another thing I would recommend.
She was also in this horrible werewolf Little Red Riding Hood movie.
That's not her fault.
Yes, I know. It's not. if you want to see her in a bad movie, check that out. And it's actually Bring It Down. I'm going to get the actual name of the movie, because I remember seeing it thinking, oh, this might be a really kind of retelling of the, you know, a really cool kind of Red Riding Hood story. But I don't think it happened.
Vampire Academy?
No, that's not it.
The Witch? Morgan?
Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of.
Morgan's a horror movie.
Thinking of Morgan, and I'm thinking of Vampire Cat. I'm thinking of one of those.
Yeah. The Secret of Marrowbone.
Oh, she's in New Mutants. I forgot about that. That's the movie. The movie that will never come out. That's the X-Men movie.
Yep.
But so anyway, she is a very talented actress for sure. And anything else you want to say about Anya Taylor-Joy?
Nope. Just she's worth seeing in Split and Glass.
Yes,
she's a good actress. As is James McAvoy's great in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's all his wacky voices. He's unloading the cannon of wacky voices.
How many personalities did they actually keep and use in the movie?
He supposedly has 24, but I don't know. You probably see 15 of them, maybe.
Sequel.
Oh yeah.
So, well, we have some great, great... Oh, I know what I'm thinking. I've got her confused with Amanda Seyfried in Little Red Riding Hood. So, again, not her fault at all.
No, not her fault at all. Especially if since it wasn't her, then we can't blame her.
Little Red Riding Hood movie.
Or should we, though, just be even though she wasn't in it?
Well, she looks like her, so that is
her
fault.
Well, that's it. She's guilty. That's...
Johnny Ruhlein's promoting his
Johnny
new novel,
Ruhlein.
Green Sheet. A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic, and it's available on Amazon in both digital and hard copy, and it's an experimental stream-of-consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her immortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And the Audacity Performing Arts Project produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com, audacityperformingarts.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide is a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. Get caught up on season one before season two premieres in February of 2019, wherever podcasts are found. Coffeeoversuicide.com.
Audacity coffeeoversuicide.com. And coffee.
Mm-hmm. Check them out. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They're recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an immensely intense listening experience. Check out alicefrazier.com with an S. And Rebecca Evans, The Art Podcast. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves. We find our own art in life. You want to hear some cool stories and get inspired? Check out The Art, facebook.com/theartpodcasts.
With art. Us.
And La Calavera by Alan Ross, the story of a pirate radio operator who decides to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal CEO, now available on Amazon in ebook and hard copy. Last but not least, David Hynek, the composer of contemporary classical music that people actually like. Check out davidhynek.com, H-E-I-N-I-C-K. All right.
Hynek.
So thank you so much, Patreon supporters. It really helps us out. It's really good. You're helping the show, and you're keeping us going. And this is a great ad tier if you want to get your business or product out there. We mention it every show. But, you know, if you don't have $50 to spend, hey, Patreon will take one or two a month. Absolutely, everything helps. We appreciate any help you guys can give. And as we say all along, there's other free ways to help, too. Good reviews on iTunes, and even like if you want to do a review on earbuds, like that you've seen maybe on Amazon Prime, that also helps. iTunes reviews, Amazon reviews, everything tracks, and it helps get us in the algorithms. So check
them out. A lot of free ways to support the show, and any of that stuff is helpful. And of course, you know, we understand some of your money's tight. Even just $1 a month, you can support Patreon.
Absolutely.
$12 a year, that's one. Like burger, fries, and some sort of drink.
Yes, it's a happy meal.
It's a happy
meal.
Yeah. Well, not a happy meal. Happy meal is $12, Chris. Come on. It's two happy meals.
Yes, it is. All right, one every 6 months.
Just get, for those of you that buy a happy meal six months. All right, let's watch some trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go.
This is extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile.
Discover card.
I just got
not
my cashback match.
All.
Is this for real?
A cumbersome title.
Not at all. And then we're gonna, there's an ad, of course, that we can't avoid.
Oh, how dare they?
These weird Discovery ads.
Yeah.
Where they cast two people that look identical and then you keep trying to go, is this?
It's only twins, Graham. Yeah. That's it.
Oh, why did that? God, I really hate using this fucking tablet thing. Sorry.
I've been staring at you all night.
What do you say we get out of here?
I find it really interesting that Zac Efron's going to play a serial killer, though.
I feel like I'm on top of the world.
There are things you don't know.
Hi, officer. I think I must be lost.
That will shock you beyond your worst nightmare.
Yes.
I am innocent. You don't actually believe this garbage, do you?
It's in all the papers, Ted.
Monkey! Oh.
How did his name get on that suspect list? I want to come see you.
I was really hoping you'd say that.
I feel like Michael Shannon turned this down and Zac Efron went, I can do it.
Yeah. It's about catching a monster.
Well, it's Ted Bundy was a good looking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Shannon
already looks like a serial killer.
Yeah.
Partner.
The media has convicted Ted before he's had his day in court.
I'm gagged, and you're not.
I wonder whether he did it or not.
I'm more popular than Disney World.
So what?
Did you do these things?
Absolutely not.
Wow.
We get back to plotting my escape here.
Surprised Lucas Hedges.
Yeah. you know, it looks interesting. You know, there's.
You never know how the execution's going to be in a movie like this.
No, you don't. Mm-hmm. I would suggest, because there's a doc series on Netflix that has the Ted Bundy tapes, that has his tapes from prison.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And I watched the trailer for it, and it looks creepy, because it's him actually in prison just going, you know, very,
talking about everything,
very
right?
calmly just going, well, you know, these women had it coming, or whatever his crazy fucking psycho thing is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. This makes it look like that trailer sort of like the wacky hijinks of Ted Bundy, you know?
Yeah. It's like, why did they put him in jail? He didn't deserve
what did
it.
Do?
Yeah. Start cheering for him.
He's
in
a
the
good
movie.
Looking guy that used to sing in Disney movies.
Come
why
on.
Would he, what's wrong with him?
You know, it's really like, I guess, unless the point of the filmmaker is to go, this is how he bamboozled everybody for
right.
so long.
And I'm hoping that's the case. Not that it's just all Hollywood polish in a serial killer movie.
Because that makes it look like a fucking rom-com.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's entirely possible the director is like, you know, screaming at the screen when he saw the trailer
right.
come back. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. So we'll have to see.
It's, I mean, because it's just sort of like Bundy's at it again.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
Like this
it was cut like a yeah.
Like a spinoff character from the Dukes of Hazzard or something.
It literally looked like a Jonah Hill movie.
Yeah.
Cut, yeah. yeah. Trailer.
What's he going to do this week?
Yeah.
Find out on Ted.
Ted, what have you gotten us into now?
Yeah.
Oh, Ted.
Know.
Oh, dude.
Now, I will say this next movie I really think might be an early Academy Award.
Really?
Yeah. It's called Among the Shadows. It might be, I don't know. I think they're pining for an award here. I think just releasing it early to get out in front of it.
Lindsay Lohan movie.
There's no such thing as a perfect writer. This is why I use Grammarly.
Yeah.
joke on
when I saw that, I was like, wait a second.
Wait a minute. Lindsay Lohan.
VMI World One, very famous studio.
I'm immensely proud of our European Federation.
You want it. Now.
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
I've been shot.
What did you say?
The Silver Bullet.
Hurry? What can I help you with?
I want to hurry.
For what?
Someone wants to kill my husband.
God, she's such a great actress.
Why don't you go to the European police?
Because I think it's one of you. A werewolf.
And what makes you so sure it's not one of you?
It's the game.
They need to see that this hasn't hurt our campaign, though.
Both candidates wolves.
Werewolves, politics, and Lindsay Lohan together.
I like it.
You have 2 days to kill it.
This poor trailer editor had to put this together.
Did you know
make it
what
like
Barry
at least
was?
10 people will go see it.
You've got to get to this trailer editor's hard drive because there's a joke cut.
Oh, yeah.
And become a stronger, more peaceful order as an example to the rest of the world. Something my husband wanted for so long. He was a good friend to me. He was someone I could trust.
I feel like I've already seen this 2-hour movie. That's what this trailer feels like. It's been on for 2 hours already. All right, I would have loved to have seen the pitch. All right, here's how we're going to do it. We're going to get Lindsay Lohan, and we're going to take all the outtakes from the Twilight movies, yeah. and we're going to cut them together, and we're going to make a new movie, and we're going to set it in Paris.
I
want to know what first-time actor is on the set of that movie. and they're just bragging to their friends like, "You would not believe this.
It's so good.
This is so good.
Yeah,
guys, I'm gonna go ahead."
I mean, to be fair, I think any filmmaker deserves credit to get Lindsay Lohan to show up on a regular basis to a set.
I hope Lindsay Lohan is sober. I hope she's clean. I hope she's turned her life around, and I hope she had fun making this movie. Because this movie looks like it is the kind of thing I wish I was hired to be in this movie. Just so I could pull that young actor aside who's like, "I bought the house, this is it." And go, "Hey man, come here." Like, no one
buy a plane ticket.
I would invest that money.
Save something for lunch.
Save something for lunch. Mm-hmm. Stay in your one bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, just
this is gonna be a franchise.
No,
it's gonna be like Twilight.
No, keep driving the Corolla.
No, Underworld.
No. Nope.
It's like not straight to the top. Yeah. It's straight to DVD, bud. Yeah,
this is Lindsay Lohan's Werewolf in Paris.
Like, Netflix is going to pass on this.
Yes.
Like, you need to know this right now.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like the kind of movie.
If Netflix needs a movie right now where they're going to lose millions of dollars, they still won't buy this movie.
Like, if Netflix server crashes and this is the only movie they could show, I don't know that they would.
Guys, let's go ahead and call it. It's been fun. Netflix.
I have a movie for you. We're gonna punch out. We're gonna give it to Hulu. We're done.
I think we should do a spoiler on this movie.
I think we should watch it live. I think we should I think we should live stream us in the theater watching
like Mystery Science.
Yes, with microphones.
We'll be the only one there.
Yeah,
we'll have the theater to ourselves.
And the best would be if we go to watch at the ArcLight. That guy will still come out and introduce the movie. Like, my thing is I go to movies on Monday mornings. I think it's like just super cool. I'll get out of class at 10. I'll just walk over to the movie theater, watch a movie.
You're going at dad time, by the way.
Yeah,
Friday, Monday morning.
I saw Glass yesterday at 11:45 a.m.
But I love going to the ArcLight because even if I'm the only person in the theater, that guy will still come out and give the spiel.
I want to know. It's like a tree fall. Like, if no one's in the theater, does he still give the speech?
I hope
they make him still.
I hope. Yeah. There's no one in there. Brian, you better. But I know there's no one in there. You have to practice it, Brian.
Yeah. It's this is in your job description.
Yeah.
Right.
You want to work Saturday nights, Brian?
Yeah.
You better do the Monday mornings.
You want a headline tonight, Brian?
This is the equivalent of you laying down on the job if you don't do this.
We got to watch this movie and make fun.
I'm in.
Yeah. All right. I'm in. Okay, good.
Done.
All right.
So coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, The Nutcracker in the Four Realms. I don't even know a child who wanted to see this movie.
Stop making up movie titles.
Yeah. It's kind of like you look at it like, first of all, kids don't even care about the Nutcracker story anymore. Mm-hmm. And second of all, you know, you've got this weird fantasy movie that Disney put together, and it just looks like, even the trailer was like, I don't know, is that, even if you just love special effects, would you really like want to see that movie? And my kids had no interest in seeing it at all.
Here's where
it tanked. It did horribly.
Well, here's how they created this movie. This is somewhere on a whiteboard is Nutcracker Lord of the Rings. Somebody wrote that, Nutcracker Harry Potter, and they went, make it. Mm-hmm. And someone went, I got it, Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
I'll have a draft to you by tomorrow, boss.
No, he pulls the script out and goes, just pulls off the title page, and then just writes, Nutcracker in the Four Realms. Boom. Anytime it says Mary, just change the name.
Yeah.
But he's probably sleeping well at night now, because he's like, yeah, at least I didn't make Among the Shadows.
Yeah.
He's good.
At least this is a Disney property, at the very least. Yeah. Someone will watch this somewhere.
This is the next movie is Hunter Killer. This is that weird submarine movie that nobody saw. And the next one is The Wife. Actually, I think, didn't Glenn Close get nominated
for this? Glenn Close is nominated for this. I have a screener for this, so I actually want to watch it. Hopefully, I'll be able to watch it for the next week or so. I want to see what a performance
is. This is one of those movies, too, in the Academy Awards where it gets nominated for performance, but nothing else. So that means she's probably great in it, but the movie around her may not be as great.
Like the Jackie Onassis.
Yeah.
Jackie Kennedy Onassis.
There's a lot of movies like that.
Yeah.
and Boy Erased. Now, this is a movie I did like. It was interesting, and it had like a great performance by Nicole Kidman, even though she wasn't in it that much. But as far as supporting goes, really great performance.
And the kid does a great job.
A great job. All the acting
what
is great.
What was his name?
Lucas Hedges. Yeah, wasn't he in it?
I was like, I want to see if he really looks it up.
Yeah. But
Lucas Hedges.
Because I believe it was an actor directed it, right? That's in the movie. Yeah, it's let's pull it up real quick, because the thing about this movie, Boy Erased, is that it's very performance-based. Like, you could tell whenever an actor directs a film, like, that's what he focuses mostly on. Yes, Joel Edgerton. Oh, and that's probably how Nicole Kidman got it. It's a very Australian cast talking about, you know, gay conversion therapy that's happening in the Midwest, which is really interesting. Like, we need a bunch of Aussies to help us tell the story.
I'm sure they do this in Australia.
Yeah.
I saw it a couple months ago, and it's intense. It's heavy.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
One of those you walk out, you're like...
Yeah. But isn't Nicole Kidman's performance? It's so good.
Yeah. Am I allowed to talk about scenes in it, or is that...
Well, no spoilers, but...
doesn't give the ending away, but when she goes to the conversion camp or whatever...
Right.
Like, she doesn't do what I think she's going to do. Like,
that's why I thought she really deserved the nomination, because she plays that... that type of character, like, well, she's, you know, a Midwest wife wife of a preacher. She's just going to be basically do whatever he says and not really voice an opinion. And that's how her character is set up. Yeah. But then she evolves from there as a character. And that's what is
that's so
fantastic.
Intriguing when a character
it was
does
really
that.
Cool. It's definitely worth it to see for performances. Like, I would have expected a few more acting nominations to come out of this movie, not necessarily for directing or screenplay or anything like that, but it's good. Definitely see it, especially for the performances.
It's that time of year where DVD and VOD is
you can catch up on stuff.
Oscar nominees like Wife and Boy Erased.
Yeah, and there's always going to be a handful that you're never going to get or see because they're nowhere.
Yeah, they're just hidden.
Yeah. And but you know, if you live in a town or you're not that, you have one movie theater or whatever, you're not going to be able to grab these. And if they're not on VOD, there's no way to catch them. Mm-hmm. Again, we say it every year. It's like, make these movies available so people could care about your dumb awards show, so people could actually watch them before the awards. On the site Spotlight, all the Dana Gould merchandise still 20% off. We're still doing the free T-shirt with every T-shirt order. But you know what I'm going to add today, Graham?
What are you going to do, Chris?
I'm going to add a free CD.
You
with every
son
CD
of a bitch.
Order. Yep. You buy a CD, you're going to get one free.
I love it.
I don't know what it's going to be, but you're going to get something.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Could be Wayne Fetterman. Could be Sully McCullough. Could be Mark Maron, Patton Oswalt. We've got a variety of CDs in the garage. That and a lot of them are signed. Not all of them, but some of them are. Wayne Fetterman. Mm-hmm. Graham Elwood, Doug Benson.
I hear he's horrible.
Still got some CDs left. You get them while you can.
Graham Elwood, not Doug Benson.
Yeah. and also, Jackie Cation stuff is going on sale too. 20% off with the coupon code DORK. And there are some Dork Forest T-shirts and a couple of CDs left. We don't have many, so they're again, it's a liquidation sale. So check it out. There's only a few left. Allison Rosen's shirts. Use the coupon code SNUGGLE for 20% off. All right. Guess what's coming out this week, Graham? Miss Bala is coming out this weekend.
We watched a trailer for that.
We did. And I'll tell you, this is actually when studios get it right as far as release windows. This is the perfect release window. There's literally nothing there. Mm-hmm. It's a counter-programming to all the Oscar movies, and it's a great time to release this movie. Now, if they were really smart, they'd do it simultaneous theatrical and on demand.
Yeah.
But I think it's just theatrical.
Yeah.
So it's also a remake of I think it's a Spanish. I'm not sure. It's a remake.
It looks
of a film.
Interesting. When we watched the trailer. I mean, it looks interesting.
I think it's a Mexican. I can't remember, but it's a remake of a film. But it's one of those movies too that. It doesn't go where you think it'll be. Like it's like, oh, this is going to be another Taken. But then she actually gets indoctrinated into the lifestyle of like the border crime between Mexico and America. And then she realizes, hey, some opportunities. Maybe I should turn this to my advantage. You see, double agent, triple agent, who's she playing? So now all of a sudden it gets a little bit more intriguing.
I love it.
So, and the next movie is Arctic. This is the basically Castaway, but in the Arctic with I think it's Mads Mikkelsen. I don't know how to say his name. Yeah.
Arctic?
Yeah.
Watch a trailer?
Yeah. No, I don't think we saw a trailer for this one.
They are like stuck in it.
But it's one of those movies too. It really feels like, oh God, this was done a year and a half ago, and we got to figure out just where to put it.
Arctic. I don't know.
Arctic. No, it's not. There is also a Mads Mikkelsen movie named Polar that where he plays a hitman, but it is not that movie. It is maybe it's the same character that once you know he's a hitman, but then he got trapped in the Arctic. I'm not sure.
Here we go.
Joe Penna, Mads Mikkelsen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And he's just like...
Yeah, he's just trapped in the Arctic. Yeah,
there's two people in the whole movie.
Yeah, that's it.
A man stranded in the Arctic after an airplane crash must decide whether to remain in the relative safety of his makeshift camp or to embark on a deadly trek to the unknown hopes of making it out alive. All right.
Okay, it is Miss Bala is a remake of a Mexican movie of the same name, so it is also called Miss Bala. So yeah, Arctic, I don't know. It feels like it just thought, like, well, this is... We just need something to put in the movie theater. I really feel like it's just a weird kind of thing. We don't know what to do with this movie, so let's just drop it now against Miss Bala.
Mads Mikkelsen's
The Gray. Yeah, but without wolves.
Mm-hmm. Castaway on ice.
But what's interesting is, like, they are making out Polar, which is just a meme about being a hitman that comes out of retirement.
Right, that's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, yeah. This one is theatrically. So I don't know. I guess he had a busy year or two, a couple of years, and now finally stuff is starting to be released.
Maybe, did he like buy property like in the Arctic,
yeah.
And they were like, these are the only way I'll do movies.
Yeah.
Scripts that I can shoot in the snow.
It feels like some weird deal was made by his reps.
Something.
Or I can only do movies unless they have titles that make you think of something cold.
I can't do any hot titles.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to shave his beard.
It's going to be...
No, he doesn't want to shave his beard. He's like, I just don't want to shave my beard.
Next movie, it's going to be a diamond heist called Ice.
Yeah.
And
there's a bank in Reykjavik that he's going to steal from.
And I'm going to be a prisoner in solitary confinement. It's going to be called Cooler.
Oh, God. Is he going to do a remake of that Jean-Claude Van Damme movie where he plays the security guard in his ice rink? Sudden Death, which I have a hockey jersey from Sudden Death that I wore at Podfest several years ago. Nice. And you know what name it says on the back? Van Damme. That's what name
Darn
it says
right
on
it
Goddamn.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one name on that team.
That's it.
And it's the only name you'll need, Chris.
Nope.
The puck drops February 14th. All right, well, I think that's episode 452.
It is. Lock it down. Put it in the books.
Punch it. Send it away.
Send it to the Arctic.
Send it to the Arctic with Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
Turn it into a F452. Mm-hmm. Turn it into a Mads Mikkelsen Frozen movie.
You really should.
I really think you should. Mm-hmm. Justin Wood, where can people find you online? Any upcoming shows, tour dates, whatever?
They can find me on Instagram at Justin_Wood_. Every Tuesday night, I'm at the Dude's Brewery in Santa Monica doing comedy. And next month, the second weekend of March, I will be at Laughs Comedy Club with Brody.
Oh.
Going up there and doing some guest spots with him. And then the last weekend of March, I'll be at the Funny Stop Comedy Club in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio.
Oh, great.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Laughs in Kirkland, Washington.
Is that where it is? I just looked up their website and saw Brody was there and asked if I can do guest spots.
Smart.
Professional.
Nice. Well, right on. Justin, thanks for doing the show. And, you know, you guys, if you follow me online, if you live in L.A., at Graham Elwood on Twitter and Instagram, I go to the Dudes every once in a while. Yeah. So when I'm doing one of those shows, I'll let you know. And also, Wednesday, January 30th, tomorrow, I'm doing Political Vigilante Live at the Sycamore Tavern, the Dojo of Comedy in Hollywood there. Free parking, a huge parking lot in the back.
In Hollywood, Graham? Free parking?
It's unbelievable. Mm. It makes it easy. $10 ticket, no drink minimum. Jimmy Dore is my guest. That's an 8 o'clock show Wednesday, January 30th. So come on out, go to grahamelwood.com for all my tickets and tours and everything like that. Cause I'm going to be headlining in Chicago at the end of February at all three of the Zanies back to back to back.
Oh wow.
And then Progressive Comedy Tour begins back up in March with Ron Placone.
Nice.
So check it out.
Right. And my graphic novel is available. It will be available from Starburns Press as well in digital form. We're working on that. That'll be up in another month or two. And also Conversations from the Abyss has started dropping the second season. The first episode, Multiple, stars Cecil Baldwin from Welcome to Night Vale. Check it out. And if you could put in a couple of ratings and reviews, because it's still kind of a new podcast and it could use some more. So Conversations from the Abyss. All right.
Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Justin Wood, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Aaron Brungard on the ATC ones and twos. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first. The Whigs had their own trailer.